Welcome to Great Big Photography World, where we like to think a little differently. It's a place where each photo counts and where creativity meets community in every frame. Are you ready to take your photography skills to new heights? Well, at Great Big Photography World, our website's a treasure trove of resources waiting for you. We offer so much to explore, including courses, projects, contests, and even a lively community that's all about creating magic with your photos. And if you're just starting out, come check out our 365 Days of Photography course, where you receive daily bite-sized nuggets of wisdom from a leading industry expert. Imagine learning and growing every day for a year. Our members say it's a transformative journey. Do you already have some experience under your belt? Well, then you'll be interested in our exclusive 52-week photography project for both DSLR and smartphones. Each week, tackle a unique theme, honing your skills and pushing your creativity like never before. As a member, you'll have access to all of our courses, projects, contests, as well as our vibrant community. Join us on this photographic adventure and create the vision you want others to see. Are you ready to join Great Big Photography World? For listeners of this podcast, we're offering an exclusive discount. Claim 50% off your first year as a premium member by visiting greatbigphotographyworld.com/join and entering the code PODCAST at checkout. Don't miss out on this chance to level up your photography game. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Great Big Photography World podcast. Spring has sprung, and with it, a new podcast host is here. My name is Perrin Adams, and I'll be the new host for the show going forward. The premise of the show stays relatively the same. You'll join me as I hang out with photographers from around the world, share advice on a broad range of topics, and learn the stories that go along with the photographs. In this episode, I interview Sean Critchfield. He's a portrait photographer out of Las Vegas, Nevada, and an ambassador for the Great Big Photography World community. In this episode, we talk about his humble beginnings as a photographer, we talk about his very busy life with his multitude of jobs, and we talk about how he's inspired by the community that he's a part of and how he hopes to spread that inspiration along to others. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hey, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Great Big Photography World podcast. My guest this episode hails from Las Vegas, Nevada, and is a talented portrait photographer, survivalist, and overall general creative powerhouse. He's also an ambassador for the Great Big Photography World community, and he's an active member on the site. I'm happy to introduce Sean Critchfield. How are you today, Sean?
I'm good. You just gave me a title I like. I'm going to change my business cards to say Sean Critchfield, creative powerhouse. I love that. Yeah, I'm good. It's busy as always, a little tired, but I feel like creative tired is a different kind of tired. So I'm happy to be creative tired.
Well, I know you're a busy man, and I'm really grateful that you agreed to sit down with me and on such short notice. I think I only gave you like a week's notice there. And thank you for agreeing to talk a little bit about the magic behind the man. But let's get this started. Why don't you tell a little bit to the folks at home about yourself?
Oh, where to start? I do a million things. I think that's kind of the life of an actor. We do everything briefly when you're kind of getting started. So I'm a educator. I teach socio-emotional learning through theater arts in Title I schools. I'm a hobbyist photographer. I am a wilderness survival expert. And I am a full-time teacher for a company called Alchemy Arts Academy that I started. It's a teen theater company. And I'm also a full-time performer. I'm currently in a show called Particle Inc. at the Luxor. I was just given the full-time contract, so I'm very excited. And it's a residency that's on the Las Vegas Strip.
You're certainly an accomplished young man, aren't you? We've only known each other for a few months and we've interacted in the community. And I know that we've connected a lot with the survivalists because I teach wilderness survival as well through short videos and online tutorials. I knew you were busy, but this is such a busy life. What drives you to lead such a busy life?
So it's interesting. This is a discussion that my wife and I have been having recently about me needing to slow down. And I think it really comes from there are so many aspects of me as a person that need to be fulfilled in different ways. And the best way to do that is to put those skills to use in a form of service within those different categories. So some of it is selfish. I think It's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because it's selfish, but it's also selfish from a place of I like to be in service. So I like to teach. I like to mentor. And I think that it allows me to both express myself in that creative way and also fill the capacity of mentoring for people.
I think that's a really interesting outlook. And halfway through you saying that, I was smiling a little bit because we do have a similar outlook on life. I've been called many times a yes man or a people pleaser, but I'm one too that believes that we're here to do service unto others, but also grow ourselves. And I get exactly where you're coming from, and I think you articulated it very well, but it leads me to believe that you are kind of like me in the sense that you're a jack of all trades. What made you want to specialize in portrait photography then, in terms of your hobby?
You know, I do want to touch on, I agree with you. I get called a people pleaser a lot. And I think that the survivalist mentality is what made me understand that, Perrin, I don't think we're people pleasers. I think we can handle a larger load than others. And I think that survivalists learn that, you know, the mind controls the body. And that when you think you're out of gas, you're probably only at 60% empty on your tank. And I think that once we embrace that, we kind of look at carrying a bigger load. And I think that me saying yes to everything is me knowing that I have the capacity to carry it, because I definitely do say no. But the portrait photography, I've always been a bit of a pixel slinger. Like, I started way back in the day on Photoshop, and I really enjoyed it. It was a creative outlet that I would play with. But I never really got into the photography aspect of it. And my wife one day was having a day, and I had a cheap little camera, and I said, let's just go take some pictures. So we walked around the neighborhood, and I took pictures, and we came back and we were looking at them, and she was like, these are really good. That kind of started the idea of, well, what if I actually learned how to do this? And now I can start with better quality pictures than the ones that I'm typically working with in Photoshop. So where most people start off as photographers and then learn to edit, I started off editing and then learned photography. And I say all the time, I'm sure many of you know me in the community, and I try to be as active as I can, but I often say these are portraits of my wife. And then in parentheses, I say, my wife is my favorite model, and she's the reason that I started. As well, my father was a photographer. My father passed away just recently. He shot pictures of airplanes for the Air Force, but he also did portraiture and was very talented, won many awards, was published in the Far East Network over there for his photography. My father and I love my father. This is going to sound negative, and I don't mean it this way, but we did not have a lot in common. But the things that we had in common were the wilderness and photography, among other things. But those were partly why I leaned into those skills, was because it really connected to me to my dad. And I think the reason that I'm doubling and tripling down on photography now is I feel like it's also a way to continue to stay connected to him. So it's a mixture of, I love taking pictures of my wife, and I've realized that I'm good at taking pictures of other people too. And portrait photography really is following in dad's footsteps.
My condolences for your father too. I know that happened quite recently, and I'm really happy to see you still burning bright out there.
Thank you.
It does lead me to ask you a question though. You might have to dig into your memory for this one, but do you have any memorable photography moments when you were younger with your father that you'd like to share, or something maybe that helps kind of this obviously came from somewhere, and it's a spark that makes you want to be more of a photographer. So are there any special moments that kind of influenced that spark?
Yes, there are a couple. I remember one time my dad saw this, it was at an airport that was probably 2 hours away from us. We were stationed in Okinawa, and there is an airport like 2 hours away that my dad had seen, where the luggage had gone underneath like the flaps that hang down to go be loaded into the plane. Those flaps were covered in different luggage stickers. And my dad just thought that would be an incredible picture. And so he grabbed my brother and I, and he threw us in the car with his camera, and we drove 2 hours north and we played along the way and had a good time. And my dad got his camera out and he shot that one particular window for probably an hour. And this was back in the day where it wasn't digital. My dad was shooting film and I think he did 2 rolls of film. And he wound up publishing that picture and it was called Lost Luggage. I'll see if I can find it. I wouldn't even know where to begin to look because it was published in Okinawa. But that was one. And then I remember when he first came home with his plaques from winning a bunch of awards for his photography, for particularly his portraiture. And I remember seeing those and then seeing the pictures next to it. And even at that young age, so I'm like probably 11, 12-ish at this point, I could appreciate what was happening in the pictures. And I could appreciate the magic that he was capturing and why people were connected to it. He also had a picture of when I was younger, I was a little towhead blonde. And we went to this big event in this city there called Nago. And I was in this sea of people and I was yelling for my dad to come look at something. And I was so excited. So he took this picture and there's this tiny little me in this sea of people. And I'm jumping and yelling for my dad. And somehow he managed to make me the subject matter of that portrait. When you look at it, you immediately go to me among all these other faces. And so those would be the three things that I really, when you said that, that immediately kind of sifted up out of my memory.
If you can get those photos, I'd love to see them.
Yeah, I will definitely try. I think I can, I'm pretty sure I can get the Nago photo, and then I'll try to find the other one.
It's almost like he understood the art of storytelling and how it kind of weaves through a photograph. That's actually kind of funny too, because my grandfather was a teacher for how to build airplanes, I guess. So that's funny that your dad liked to take pictures of them. It's his ability to draw the viewer's eye directly to what he's trying to say. So you're saying that the photo with you in it and your face stands out amongst all of it. That's not an easy skill to learn. And it looks like in your work, you've kind of taken that and you're doing your own twist on it. But that leads me to kind of ask, like, what do you try to capture or show through your portraits, whether it be through your wife or through anyone else? What are you trying to show the viewer each time you show us a photograph?
That's a great question. First of all, I want to say, though, that I can't even pretend to be surprised anymore when we have more in common, Perrin. I just feel like I'm a lot of the relationships and the friendships that I've started to build, even just in the chats and just in the conversations back and forth in Great Big Photography World, have been really special to me. And what an amazing community that when I look at some of the photographers there, Frederica and Steven and, you know, like just and Robert, like I'm just blown away by the work. And then for them to consider me a peer blows my mind. So I'm grateful for the friendships that I'm forging in that community. It's very important to me. But to answer the question, the thing that I love is 99, and I'm sure other portrait photographers, you know, please comment if you find this to be true too. And I'd love to hear if people have thoughts on how you handle this statement. But people say to me every time, I hate having my picture taken. I don't look good in pictures. I don't look good. And I go, okay, well, let me prove you wrong. That's always my answer. And then what I want to convey is when I'm just getting into tethering, but when I turn my laptop around, I love to watch their jaw drop. And I've been told so many times that you took the best picture of me I've ever had. That's my favorite picture of me. I've heard that so many times. And I've really kind of dove into as much as I can, well, is there a formula for that? And I think that it's taking the time to get to know them and talk to them and find out who they are. And then I want to capture that. When I shoot portrait photography, I want to represent the person in front of the camera. And sometimes that means, okay, well, you have this really interesting hobby, or you have this fantasy of dressing up as this person. So let's realize that. Let's realize the thing that's in you that you haven't seen yet in the pictures that are taken of you. And then little tricks like one of my go-tos is if I get like a really good composition and everything just looks perfect and I've got a couple of serious shots, I say, while I've got the camera ready to go, finger on the shutter, I say, man, these are going to be great as soon as I edit the boogers out of your nose. Everybody laughs. And I blast as many pictures as I can of them laughing. And I've got some great, like, shocked expressions when I first say it, and then great laughter afterwards. And I also find that after that, people realize it's not serious, and then they start to relax.
I think people have this preconceived notion that all photography sessions, whether it be portraiture, wedding, engagement photo, whatever it is, they have the stigma that you need to be professional and very rigid. When I first started doing engagement photos and weddings, not so much weddings, it was engagement and family, I didn't go in with like a shot list in mind. I only went in with a location that I knew that would suit the couple or that they even recommended to me, because I was just beginning. I didn't know anything about that. But I learned fast as I got into weddings that they were so rigid, especially the bride. No, it was the groom's mom. They need the photos to look this and this. But it's you're right. The best sessions are the ones that are not rigid. It's just you have a great time. It's like this podcast between me and you. We're just talking back and forth type of thing. And I think that is the secret to connecting with your subjects to get great portraits. Do you have any other tips that you use to connect with others? I'm trying to think of some that I have.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say one is there are going to be a lot of portrait photographers that cringe when I say this.
I know.
I set up my lights with them in the room. I have everything generally done. What I found was when I would try to be like, hey, let's sit down and have a coffee and chat, that was just as stressful for them. But if I go, hey, why don't you hop up on that stool? I've got to set a few things up. And then I start chatting, it sinks them into the space a little bit more. So it's a device. So I'm 80% set up, but I take a few minutes and I tell them it's going to be a slow process. I'm going to take a picture. I'm going to adjust the light. I'm going to take a picture. I'm going to adjust the light. And then what I find that does is two things. They calm down. They get over the nerves. We get to chat while I'm doing it. And they get about 10 clicks before we're ever actually really taking a portrait to get used to the lights and the flash and the camera. And it kind of lets them baseline a little bit. That's definitely one. And then with couples, and this again, like, please know your clients. I would never do this with clients that I don't know personally, but I'll do stuff like, if I've got like portrait and they're doing like this serious loving stare into each other's eyes, I'll ask the guy if he's comfortable with like grabbing her butt or something like that. And then the second he does it, like, she's like, oh, and then I get that picture, you know, and just fun stuff like that. Like things that are unexpected that obviously, like, know your clients, make sure that's a married couple, make sure she's going to think it's funny, but, you know, like, get out of the box, have them do silly things, have them tell you, get everything dialed in. Don't be looking through the viewfinder, have the camera off to the side, and then ask them questions about their life and be sneaking pictures while you're doing it. You know, those are a couple of things that I use.
I just had a weird thought. It's almost like you're at a hairdresser or a barbershop, and it's just the person's cutting your hair and they're keeping you distracted by asking you how your day is and stuff like that. And that actually leads me to another point. I like it when things go wrong. And I don't mean big things like catastrophic, we need to reschedule. I'm thinking like, I forgot to put the memory card in my camera, but it's in my laptop case type of thing. Because then you can highlight that. It doesn't, again, it depends on the client, but it doesn't make you look super unprofessional. It just makes you look human and you can kind of joke around it. I find if I make a joke about myself type of thing, not in the sense where it's insulting, it also lightens people up as well.
Yeah. And banter, like you just said, I think that's great too. I'll do a bit of like, while I'm shooting, I'll say stuff like, oh, get out of here. Are you kidding me? Like, these are so good. And just little things that are like, I'll do the cheesy, like, oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, this is amazing. This is amazing. And people, like, they just all of a sudden their eyes light up and they smile bigger. So I don't want to be the stuffy photographer. I want it to be the whole thing start to finish to be a fun experience. So I love that barbershop kind of feel. I think that's spot on.
How long have you been doing this for?
Seriously, about a little over a year. Mm-hmm. I started with my smartphone, which I still use and still love. And I think it is a underrated piece of technology. And I know that you will completely agree with me on that for obvious reasons.
Absolutely. But,
I still use that. I have a little lens kit that's got some fun, interesting variable lenses that attach right on the front of it. It's in my backpack all the time.
Is it from Oppo? Is it the Oppo lenses?
I've got a few of them. There's one, it's something tech. I'll find and send it to you.
Oh,
but
cool.
I just literally bought like cheap ones. Just get on Amazon and look for a cheap kit because the camera's going to do 90% of the work. That's just to add a little fun. That way I never miss a shot. And so, you know, you're driving and you see something pretty, you've got a great camera right there in your pocket. So stop and take the picture, you know? And so started there, then got a crop sensor, messed around with the crop sensor for a while, and then took a class. And the teacher did an amazing job of getting us out of automatic and into manual in like less than an hour.
Whoa.
Yeah. It was super cool. What she did was she said, she showed us the exposure triangle and she said, and I don't want you to worry about what any of those mean. There's a little arrow that needs to be in the center of the bar at the bottom and you move those three things to get it there. Go out and take pictures. I don't care what they look like. I don't care if they're underexposed. Like it doesn't matter. I want you to get that little arrow in the middle. And so we all went and we messed around with the three settings. So we started to understand how they related to each other. And then we came back in and she said, now these are what these three settings mean. So before we even had to start thinking about whether or not my depth of field was this or this and whether or not my ISO, oh no, I'm raising my ISO past 800, which I find ridiculous. You know, we were just trying to get the three points of the triangle in balance. And then we went into, okay, so if you want your picture to look more like this, then you need to adjust this. And now you know that if you adjust this, it's got to come from somewhere else. So you're adjusting somewhere else. And we were all shooting in manual very quickly, obviously with a ton to still learn, but it got our brains in manual mode. And so I did that. And then if I have a superpower, it's that if I decide to learn something for whatever reason, the universe sees fit to just drop world-class instructors in my path. And I think that's a bit of just that whatever it is that I'm doing, I'm super open to being wrong, learning more. I have the opposite of, I forget what it's called, but the effect when you think you know more than you do, is it Dunning-Kruger? It might be. Anyway, I have the opposite of that. I'm always hyper aware of what I don't know. And so I'm real open to being taught. And so I had some friends that were tremendous photographers agree to start showing me things. One of them, Kirk Marsh, he does photography for like Cirque, incredible portrait photographer. And he told me that the reason that he took me on was because when someone would look at my pictures, I'd be like, that's great that you like it. What's wrong with it? And he said, like, you, the fact that you're open to criticism is what's going to help you. And so he started training me a bit. And then he was the one that also told me, I need you to shift your mentality right now. It's no longer gear, gear, gear. It's class, class, class. The next time that you think, oh, I want to buy that new fancy thing, get a class instead and go train with someone. And he said, that's what's going to be the difference between being a good photographer and a great photographer. And then another friend of mine, Brian DeKenya, who's another brilliant photographer, and I'll send you, when I send you the photos, I'll send you some of their work as well. Mm-hmm. He told me, don't upgrade your gear unless you absolutely know why you're upgrading. Don't buy the new lens because everyone says you need to buy it. Buy it because the lens you're working with will not accomplish what you need it to. Because then you know why you're buying the new lens. You know, and that was a game changer for me. Like I didn't step up to the 70 to 200 fancy Corvette of a lens for my Canon until I knew why I needed it. Until I was like, I can't accomplish what I want to accomplish with this. I need that lens.
Hey again, loyal listeners of the Great Big Photography World podcast. Sorry to interrupt the episode, but I just wanted to take a moment from our interview to talk about another way you can help us grow. You see, your feedback is like gold to us, and by taking a moment to leave us a review, you're not just sharing your thoughts, but you're also helping shape the future of our content. By that, I mean you're helping us tailor our episodes to provide more meaningful experiences for each and every one of you. Just as in our community, your words have the power to influence the direction of our podcast. So we have a humble request for you. Please consider leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. Your input is invaluable, and it directly contributes to the growth and success of our podcast. Together, let's make our great big photography world even bigger. Thank you for being part of this incredible journey with us. We can't wait to hear your thoughts. Now back to our interview. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
Yeah, you made a bunch of good points there. Wow, very similar mindset here. So I'll let you in on a little secret. I've been using my original camera that I bought probably now 11 years ago. It's an Olympus OMD M10. No, it's M10. I forget the... It's a whole bunch of letters and numbers, but as you know, Olympus is no longer around. They got bought out by OM Systems. So I have a Canon that I had as a second shooter in case I needed it for weddings, but I've still been using the same Micro Four Thirds mirrorless camera for 10 years with the same kit lens, and I have a telephoto lens. But yeah, you don't need the latest equipment as long as you have a really good visual eye and I think a strong imagination. You have to have it to see what others don't.
I totally agree. I'm on a 5D MK3 and I have no interest in stepping out of this camera. When this camera finally goes to the great camera heaven in the skies, then maybe I'll look at something else. But man, that thing, it does everything I need it to do as well as I need it to do it.
I'll have to check out the shutter count and send it to you. I don't know. It's definitely north of like 70,000.
I love that.
You talked about the exposure triangle, and I really, really like that because any photographer that I've met that is either successful or I enjoy their work. I actually enjoy all photography, to be honest. It's all interpreted differently, but a lot of them learned from the exposure triangle. That's exactly how I learned. And when I teach other photographers, I'll generally start with that. And you made a point about the arrow being in the middle of the light meter. And that means that it is a balanced exposure for the midtones. And then once you have that, you can then diversify and you can overexpose for the highlights to get like a high key photo, or you can make the darks darker and then you can just expose for different things. So the nice thing about the exposure triangle is once you change one thing, you have to change another to keep that balanced. So it's a very structured, easy to understand concept. And then you move into compositions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And you know, I will say that like the ISO thing is such a divisive thing, and there are many things that lead to noise in your photography. But for those of you that are just starting, like that's the easiest thing to understand is that the higher your ISO gets, the more potential for noise in your photography. Lean into it. Some of my favorite photographs that I've taken are noisy, and sometimes that's what you just have to do. I was doing a photography session with my wife, and I just could not get my strobes to behave the way that I wanted them to. And anyone that says that they've never had that session is lying. And I eventually just went to continuous light and I shot, and there was a little bit of grain in the pictures and I loved it. So don't be afraid to turn your ISO up.
And I mean, there's a grain setting in photo editing programs for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. I look at ISO last generally because I focus on nature and landscape. My first question in my head generally is, what do I want to shoot? Is it static or is it moving? Depending on that answer, I'll adjust either the shutter speed or the aperture first. And then to kind of round out the exposure, I'll adjust the ISO. Though I try to keep the ISO at 100, 200 max, because that obviously doesn't give me any grain. But you are absolutely correct. In a lot of different types of photography, grain is needed. Vintage, you've got even black and white photography, it adds texture. It's such a needed thing in a lot of genres.
Absolutely. With a lot of the newer cameras, your ISO can get really high. I know we're getting into the technical weeds here, but your ISO can get really high before you get noise. So like in some cases, I'll even go to just letting my camera handle the ISO for me, because I know in most cases, unless it starts getting extreme, it's not going to affect my picture quality. And that allows me to worry more about the other two settings. Anyway, just a little thought out there for some of the newer photographers.
It sounds like in the year or just over a year that you've started taking this seriously, you've learned quite a bit. And I can tell the experience in your thought process there. Are you able to kind of elaborate on how your style has evolved over that year and what kind of influences have shaped to what it is now?
Absolutely. So I would say that one of the things, I'm actually going to write something about this for the community and Great Big Photography World, is the biggest thing that's evolved is photography is capturing light, period, full stop. That's it. It's capturing light. And I found that I've grown to be able to see light in my day-to-day life differently. And I think it's one of the biggest gifts that photography has given me. When I'm driving to work at 6 a.m. and I see the sun coming up and I see the beams of light, or I see the way that it's playing on the mountain ranges around me and the textures that it's casting and creating, so much of my life is spent going, oh, I wish I could take a picture of that right now, you know? And in some cases, you just can't. There isn't time to do it. But I've learned to appreciate, to see the world and appreciate the world differently as a photographer than I think most people ever get to. And I think that that has been the biggest thing for me, is controlling light. Like when I go back and I look at dappled shadows on people early on, or not understanding where my light source was coming from, that's where I see the majority of my growth. And then kind of in that middle period where I was afraid to shoot in direct sunlight, I was always looking for the diffuse lighting. I was always looking for the shade. And in retrospect, I'm like, man, I missed some great portraits, you know? And then to finally figured out that the sun can be a key light or a fill light. I can use that however I want, that the, you know, speed lights, the portable speed lights are not expensive. You don't have to have super fancy ones, and you can create beautiful portraiture. I'll make sure that I include it. I have a picture of my wife, the desert behind her sitting on a rock, and that was done middle of the day, sun overhead, and one speed light and a shoot through umbrella.
Did I see that one?
Yeah, I'm sure you did. It's the one that was done in the temple. There's the one she's in the temple, and then the one where she's sitting looking directly at the camera. I think you commented on use of thirds in the picture.
So. Yeah, as soon as you said it, I could picture it. And that's obviously one of the most memorable photos if it comes to my mind. But yeah, I'm definitely going to go back and have a look at it again.
I'll make sure it ends up in the photos that I'm sending to you.
Oh, but okay, good.
That for me was when I was starting to shoot the stuff that I had in my head. Before that, it was kind of a, I'm going to overshoot, and then I know that I'm going to get some winners in here. And now I'm starting to shoot the stuff that I have wanted to. And I have so much further to go. I mean, I don't care how long you shoot. We're all amateurs. No one lives long enough to be anything more than an amateur. We don't have time to master everything. And also, amateur literally means for the love of. And so if you become a professional photographer and you don't love it anymore, what are you even doing? You know? So
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. I've met a few, they call it burnout, or being burnt out, I believe. So that's a creative thing that you need to get that spark back. Now, you're talking some great things to me. And since light seems to be your greatest ally, what's the most challenging thing that you came across starting out? And what are some challenges you have right now that you're trying to work on with your portraiture?
So some of the challenges, oh man, I don't even know where to start. I can give you so many.
We got time, brother. We got time.
All right. So some of the challenges when I first started was understanding, even with like your continuous lighting in a studio, where to place stuff. And meaning your continuous lighting or your strobes. So you can get online and you can see all these different butterfly lighting and clamshell lighting and, you know, all these different types of lighting. And that's great. But when you're first starting out, remember that we don't do film anymore. Like, film is free. So shoot a lot, but don't get caught up in taking 18 pictures that look exactly the same that you then have to sort through and try to figure out which one is the best one. When I say shoot a lot, shoot, move the light a little bit, shoot, move the light a little bit, shoot, move the light a little bit until you start to see what it is that you want. And then stop and look at your lights. Start to develop that relationship with your lighting. That was one of the biggest challenges for me. And then the other problem was, and now that I see this a lot, but when I was first starting out, I had a tendency to try to set up all of the lights right at the beginning and then shoot and adjust. Don't. Set up one light and make sure that that light is doing what you want to do. Add the second light. Make sure that that's doing what you want to do. And now it's, I still struggle with my strobes. I still struggle with getting everything balanced and exactly how I want it to be, because you can do proportional lighting on a lot of the strobes now, but it's still going to look different when you click the shutter. And so I don't have the long-term experience with strobes to set them up and know exactly what the portrait's going to look like. So I do a lot of trial and error, even now with strobes. And I'm trying to force myself to grow as an artist, to not just give up and go back to continuous lighting. I can shoot continuous lighting. Let's learn the next thing, because it's another tool in my kit. And then if I decide that I don't like it once I understand it, then cool, I'm a continuous lighting photographer. But I'm always looking to challenge myself. And then from an editing standpoint, I would say that early on, it was overprocessing my portraits. We all did it. We all were like, all right, let me bump up the contrast really, really high. Let me saturate the hell out of this picture. And then I'm going to do a ton of vignetting and ooh, let's throw in a lens flare. And
dude, I did that yesterday, dude.
I mean, if it's a creative choice, then, you know, and
it was a preset gone bad.
I love that. But yeah, I mean, and look, there is a time and a place for every single one of those and all of those in combination. But I just found myself doing stuff like that and over processing my images. And now I'm still trying to do better with dodge and burn. That comes down to that same thing about, yeah, you can dodge one side and burn the other side, and that's going to look really cool. But I have seen people take pictures from excellent to absolutely magical just with dodge and burn. So that's kind of my current thing, is I spend in my editing flow, the majority of my time is dodge and burn, because I'll dodge and burn the whole image. Then I will either create a new layer on that, or even if I'm certain I'm happy with it, flatten it, and then do another curves layer for the subject, flatten it, and then do another curves layer to contour the face of the subject. And it's resulted in some really gorgeous imagery, but that's kind of the frontier for me right now, is further embracing light and learning how to be in relationship with that light in my photography, both behind the camera and then once it's in an, you know, Photoshop or whatever you edit with.
Yeah, the dodge and burn technique is definitely a great way to highlight shadow and light. I use primarily Lightroom for my editing just because I don't do a lot of pixel manipulation. And one of my favorite methods is to use the, I don't know if you use Lightroom, but they have the radio filter and you can invert it. And I'll just go around and put little circles around when there's light and increase the highlights or increase the shadows and stuff. And it really can change it. And I mean, curves are amazing. It's such an under talked about tool, I suppose, because it could be complicated for some people. But if you can understand a histogram, then the curve tool is much easier to read.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually have a video that I did for Great Big Photography World, so you can look that up, where I do a non-destructive dodge and burn technique that people can check out. It's pretty common. I'm not claiming to have invented it. It's a great technique because when you use the dodge and burn tool that's native in Photoshop, it's destructive, and you find yourself control Z, control Z, control Z, control, you know, where this one, you have so many different things. You can feather it. You can pull your curves down. You can use your fill adjustment or your opacity adjustment and things like that. And you have a lot more control over it. And when you mask it, I can just take it back out. I can just erase it. I can just etch a sketch it and start over. And so I think that that's a real good way to get in and get your hands dirty and know that I can completely ruin my dodge and burn and then literally start over and play and give yourself the freedom to play with that light and see what you like.
I like that community video drop thing there, just so the listeners understand. If you want to watch Sean's awesome video, I did see it. It was about a month ago, I think I watched it. You can become part of our community, and Sean's pretty active there, and he does great videos. You get to hear his lovely voice in our community quite often.
I love that.
Now, throughout this episode, you've kind of talked about the gear that you like using, but I just want to circle back to that. What's kind of your core kit that you use for most of your portrait photography?
It's recently changed, and once I started using this lens, it's very hard to go back. So I have the Canon 5D MK3, and I shoot with the 70 to 200, the 2.8. That was an investment, but again, I really wanted the really nice bokeh backgrounds. I really wanted that sharp, crisp, beautiful depth of focus that you can get on the subject. And I could see a vision in my head, and I was able to get close to it with my existing equipment, but I couldn't quite get there. And that was what finally made me step up to that. So I shoot with those two. I have strobes. I have a little mini home studio, and I have strobes in that. But predominantly, I carry a couple of speed lights and a shoot-through umbrella. And then I've got a little soft box that can either fit onto the camera mounted on the speed light, or it can be, you know, if I put it on a little tripod. So I have a little go bag that's light, couple of tripods, couple of speed lights, couple of shoot through umbrellas. And that doesn't go with me every time, but that's primarily what I'm shooting with. I love speed lights. And in my tiny little studio, there's a lot of times where the big strobes come down and the speed lights go up. So that's typically my kit.
It seems like it's a pretty rounded kit for most situations. Is there any additional equipment that you would want, maybe if you get into more of a professional, not more professional in terms of expanding your professional portfolio?
Yeah, I think that what I'd like to get is, I have a few softboxes and I'd like to get some deeper, like the parabolic softboxes, mm-hmm. I'd like to get some deeper of those. I'd like to get more stuff on C-stands. Like now you're like, basically it's like, okay, this, if I'm going to play the gear game, like, would definitely be the things that I would want. You know, I'm pretty happy with the kit that I have. It does. That's that mentality. I've kind of embraced it so much that it's like, no, I can do everything with what I've got. So if I had to, at this point, I just would want more options to set up more of the stuff that I have. So I'm looking more at, like, talking about like C-stand stuff.
Mm-hmm. You want to dial in your settings kind of thing and make it so that it does the best in any situation. Now it's in the matter of tweaking things.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that if we count what I said earlier as gear, yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm the guy that, when you know, your social media pops up with the targeted ad that is like, this has 4 hours of this photographer's editing process, I'm the guy that's always like, $12, I need that, you know? So I really embrace that side of, like, I love learning. And I've gotten to the point where my flow is pretty dialed in, that even when I watch the video, I'm not like following along. I'm just kind of observing and going, oh, that's a great tip. Oh, that's a great trick. Oh, I never considered doing that like that. And then within every video, I'll find something where I'll go, that is brand new to me. Pause. Okay, let me open up Photoshop and follow along with you. But that's it for me, is I just love watching other photographers work. That's actually one thing that I can throw out there is, if you ever get the opportunity to assist, this was the hardest thing in the world for me to do, and it paid off so much. My friend Jordan Fried, is another brilliant photographer. He invited me out to come out on a shoot, and I didn't even bring my camera. I just said, I absolutely will assist you. I'll assist you for free. And in exchange, I get to be annoying and ask you 10,000 questions. I never clicked a photograph once. I just watched him work. Why'd you move that there? Why'd you do this? And then on the second day, I said, do me a favor, as little as you can, don't move anything. Let me move it. And he'd say, okay, move that light here. And I would move it and then come back and look at what he was looking at and ask why he was doing things. And I watched my photography jump a level doing that with him over 3 or 4 days, and never took a single photograph. And it was weird too, because I felt a little bit of a sense of creative ownership over what we had shot. Like, obviously, I'm not like, those are my photographs, but I felt the creative satisfaction of having a hand and having made that art. And when I looked at it, I didn't feel like, oh man, I wish I had my camera and I could have taken that. I felt like I was a part of taking that. And so I think it comes back to, as I'm dialing it in, is I'll always go lessons, classes, meetups, Great Big Photography World, ask questions there over buying more gear until I know why I need the gear.
Yeah, that's called, what's the word, experiential learning. Basically, it's like I threw you in the lake and you got to learn how to swim. I work in a similar way. I like an example. And what I'll do with that example is kind of make it my own. It looks like you took it a step further and you just like integrated his techniques into your very being. And it's just, it's helped evolve your style, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and I would say that that same thing is true about if you're going to do that, take the classes from the people whose work you admire. And that's a big thing, is look at a lot of photography. Get online, and there are so many apps now and so many communities, and Great Big Photography World is amazing. You can go to any member and you can click and look through their photographs and then ask those people what they're doing. Because if that's what you want your art to look like, learn from the people who are taking those portraits.
I agree. And I think that's why the community is such a good resource, because we have people of all experience levels and all kinds of genres as well. And the community is just adding more to it with things like masterclasses and things like that. So it's definitely a place to learn and then discuss. And then down the line, like you said, meetups and things like that. So
the other thing that Great Big Photography World has is I was part of a bunch of other like online photo communities. And this is the absolute truth. The membership that I have now is Great Big Photography World. And the reason why is because I noticed, and I'm not bad mouthing any other communities, I promise, this is just my own personal experience. I noticed a lot of toxicity, and I noticed that it was either like in the community, it didn't matter what you shot, everyone was trashing it, or everyone was talking about how amazing this photographer is and how, you know, they walk on water and can do no wrong. In Great Big Photography World, every single person I've met is generous with their time and their knowledge and their information. And you will get, this is great, this is great, this is great, not crazy about this. And I promise you, both of those are just as valuable, and it will always come from a place of support and kindness. And that's why I jumped in headfirst, you know, deep dive into that community and burrowed myself in, because I could see the value of what was going on with the members in that community.
Oh yeah. Within like 2 weeks, you were like, it had seemed you had been there for months. So you definitely integrated yourself well. And it's the consistent posting. You always ask for feedback, and it's just generally you're there to learn, and it really ties into what your overall personality is.
Thank you. Yeah.
I know we're coming up to the hour. We have about 10 minutes left, but I really wanted to pick your brain about landscape and nature photography, because I know you do that as well. Not to the same extent as portraiture, but have you always lived in Nevada taking landscape photos, or you moved around? Where's the landscape fit into this? I'm intrigued.
So I'm an Air Force brat. So I lived all over, and then Dad retired out of Nellis Air Force Base when I was like 13 or 14, or we came here and when I was 13 or 14, and then Dad wound up retiring out of here. So Nevada and the Sierra Nevadas and these mountains have been my home for years and years, but I wound up doing quite a bit of traveling as a performer. So I'd go and do a gig and come back and go and do a gig and come back. And being involved in the wilderness skills has always gave me such an appreciation for the land that we live on. And I think that I find it interesting, we talked a little bit about it, that it feels like that should be my primary subject matter, you know, is landscaping. But I appreciate it, and I appreciate the beauty of it, and I love to look at it. But I feel like maybe it's that I already feel connected to the landscape. So it takes a particular mood or type of connection or feeling in me to get out and want to take those pictures, as opposed to I feel like photography has become kind of an avenue that connects me to people in a way that I normally am not. I'm definitely an introvert. I'm very good at being extroverted, but I'm certainly an introvert. So I think that my relationship with landscaping is even probably more intimate than portrait photography, because the act of taking pictures of the land feels almost more sacred to me. And I hope that that becomes represented in the landscapes that I do take.
So does that mean I have to go camping with you so we can do a landscape photography session?
No, no, no. We get to go camping so we can do a landscape photography session.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. You did say I have to go down there and visit you at some point, and I would love to do that. I'm on the road enough as it is, so we should plan for something later in the year for that, whether you come up to Canada here or I come visit you in the hot desert.
Or both.
It's a road trip. Let's do it.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love landscapes, and I'll include a couple. But yeah, that's usually it, is that when I'm out there, I'm present in it and I just don't think to pick up the camera, but then something will strike me. And that's the moment when I go, okay, I need that in my lens.
Have you found that your involvement in the dramatic arts, whether it be filming, not producing, directing, that's the one. Have you found that it's influenced your overall outlook on photography? Because I know you've submitted some really cool photos, I guess, of the studio, or I don't even know what the auditorium, something, the place where you work. And it was like this image of mist or smoke, and there was a light in the background. Mm-hmm. I found that remarkable. Has that influenced your style at all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One thing that I would challenge people to do, because I think it has affected my photography a lot, is there are a handful of my photographs that there's one of my wife is a Joel Grimes ripoff. You know, like, obviously I didn't do it so deliberately that it would offend that photographer, but it's very derivative of that.
And it was inspired by, we'll call it.
Yeah. Inspired by. And when I did it and I set that shot up, it was because I wanted to understand what that photographer was doing and could I get into their headspace. But I used that as a vehicle to inform my art. And as a director, I have to envision the show from the ground up. So I have this idea of what it looks like, and then I have to create that with lighting, with costumes, with actors, with all of these components. And I think that you can see, I mean, there's pictures of my wife in various different costumes. We've got that super creepy session that I did where I daguerreotyped the ghost moving into the portrait.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you know, that's very theatrical. And so I would say that imagine if you were opening up your photography coffee table book and you were thumbing through the images of your work, what do those look like? And then get busy, make those. And you can learn how to make those by looking at photography and taking lessons and asking me and asking other people in the community how to do things. And you don't even have to ask, like, what were your settings on that shot? You can reach out to me and say, I'm thinking about this. What would you do to set up for that? And I'm happy to tell you. I'm happy to give you any, if you could see me doing air quotes right now, I would say expertise, because I do not consider myself an expert yet. But whatever information I have is at your disposal to create that. And that's what theater did for me, was I had to understand what a cool light does over a warm light, what indirect lighting does over diffused or direct lighting. I had to know what aspects costumes were going to bring to it and things like that. And I think it's really informed everything I do, is that when I'm setting up a scene for portrait, I'm thinking like a theater director, because I want to tell a story in that image.
It seems like you've created a very synergistic lifestyle with the professions and hobbies that you've chosen to do. If people wanted to look for you online, where's a good place to find you, whether it be for your survivalists, your photography, or even your other work?
Sure. Great Big Photography World. I'm probably more active there than anywhere else. I neglect my Instagram horribly, but you can find me there at dream_scape.photo. I promise to make that easier at some point in the future. I was young. I didn't know better. And then ruggedindividual.ist is my website for my wilderness skills. And I am working on a Pixie set because I've had people that want to buy prints. So when I know more about my Pixie set, I will make sure that that's on my Instagram. So if you go to my Instagram, that'll probably be the easiest way to find yourself, your way to my other sites.
Yeah. When you get that sorted out, let me know and I can, I'll promote it on my social media because I think that's a really cool thing to do and diversifying your profile. Like you're just like me. But anyway, Sean, thank you so much for finally sitting down with me. I do have one more question for you before we leave.
I'm not in a hurry, so you can hit me with as many as you want.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so my final question for you is, what do you hope to learn on this journey in the great big photography world?
I think that it's memories are currency, and I think that documentation is important, and I think that photography is a wonderful way to do that. And that, you know, the silly pictures of my dad at the restaurant for his birthday, being silly over his cake with the candles in it. When I took that picture, I did not know how important that capturing that moment was. And I think that you kind of addressed it just a moment ago, and it kind of crystallized for the very first time in this podcast in my head, that I think that what I'm doing with photography and the reason that they're all synergized is I've spent so much time cultivating these different art forms and then not documenting them. And I think that the art that I'm creating with other people is worth documenting. And this journey in photography is I want to honor that and do it as well as I can. And I think that's why I spend the time that I do in, you know, classes over gear and picking the brain of other photographers and being willing to put myself out there and ask for critiques on the work that I'm doing. Again, coming back to the Great Big Photography World community, Perrin, I've mentioned this many times in comments, and if you look for them, you'll see it. I love that you will spot tiny little things. And sometimes you spot things that I crafted thinking no one in the world is going to know that that's there but me, but I know it makes the photograph better, and you'll spot it, or you'll spot something and I'll go, how did I miss that? And that's the benefit that I'm gaining from everyone, from every single time I put a photograph up. It's helping me to capture these moments of life better, and that's worth doing. And honestly, the too long didn't read of that is more beautiful art in the world equals better. It's a net positive for everyone if we're making pretty pictures for everyone to look at. It just existing in this world, whether that be as a professional, as an amateur, just on your social media, just for you to show your friends, just because it feels good to create it, the world is a better place with more beautiful art in it.
Yeah, there's definitely no downside to it. That reminded me of a saying that energy is not created nor destroyed. It is merely changed. Mm. You have nothing to lose by creating. You're just transmuting the energy from your imagination into something tangible that someone may or may not like. So the only thing you have to lose is nothing. You're just creating an image. As long as you enjoyed the experience and you learn something from it, that's a win-win in my books, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, Sean, thank you so much for stopping by. This has been an incredible conversation, and I'm hoping later on down the line we'll have you on again. And thank you so much.
I would love that. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast episode, but the fun doesn't stop there. Why not take your journey further and join us in the Great Big Photography World community? Immerse yourself in a community of passionate photographers where inspiration flows, creativity thrives, and magic really does happen. Discover our exclusive projects and contests to take your images to the next level. As a member, you'll gain access to all of that and more. For a limited time, claim your special discount of 50% off your first year as a premium member by visiting greatbigphotographyworld.com/join and enter the code PODCAST. It's our way of saying thank you for being part of our world. Before you go, please share your thoughts with us and help us grow together. Your reviews are key to shaping our content and providing more meaningful experiences for you. With that being said, let's capture moments, inspire each other, and create something truly extraordinary. The Great Big Photography World awaits you.